Hello there, and you're very welcome to Poem of the Week. Hello, I'm Morgan O'Reilly, and once again, you're very welcome to Poem of the Week, Near FM's year-long series promoting poetry. The series is a collaboration between Near FM, local poets, and members of the community. Each week, we will be celebrating poetry, both new and old, Irish and international, and published and unpublished work, alongside a significant date in our calendar. This week's poem is Auschwitz, written and read now by Katie Donovan.
Auschwitz. Sounds like a mouth, empty of hope, falling to the death hush. It's that hush which today's birds can't sing through, the tourist shuffle remove. The earth is replete with your lost flesh. In the prisons you built for yourselves lie the left behind things, the toothless brushes, loll-tongued children's boots, pots past their prime, a room full of your suitcases, locked hopes from the old life left unopened. You are never more present than in these possessions that ink the outline of your lives. The piles of cracked shoes recall your naked limbs in the pits. Your swathes of hair fill a room. They took everything of you, saved it for us, whose tears cannot deflect the accusatory lenses of your broken spectacles.
Auschwitz by Katie Donovan. Wonderfully read there by the poet herself, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio this morning by Katie. That was a lovely reading, Katie. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Katie, can you tell us a little bit about this poem?
Yes, it's an old poem now in that it was written in 1988. I was living in Hungary, teaching English as a foreign language, that great sort of ticket to see the world and get paid for it. And at the time, Hungary was still nominally behind the Iron Curtain, although things were beginning to change. Wow. And so I was kind of fascinated to see how that life would be, having just spent 2 years in California, living a very different kind of life as a student in Berkeley. So while I was based in this village, it's called Sárospatak in the northeast of Hungary, I did a little travelling, and one of my trips was to go to Krakow up in Poland. And while I was in Krakow, I went to Auschwitz.
This collection was Watermelon Man back in 93. That was your first collection, wasn't it?
That's right. Yes. Yeah, that was my first collection. And it has been said, notably by the German philosopher Theodore Adorno, that there should be no poetry after Auschwitz, that poetry after Auschwitz would be barbaric to even attempt a lyric after that atrocity. But I suppose, first of all, at that young age, I was 25, I had no clue that those words had been spoken, that there was an off-limits sign around that topic. I suppose I was very shocked and upset. And also aware of the sort of voyeuristic element of going there at all. Mm. And I suppose I try to highlight that, you know, in the accusatory lenses of your broken spectacles. Mm. In other words, yes, look at this and do something about it. And you know, why are you looking?
The first extermination of prisoners in Auschwitz took place in September 1941, and the camp went on to become a major site of the Nazis' final solution. Over the course of the war, an estimated 1.1 million people died in Auschwitz, 90% of whom were Jews. The day that Auschwitz was liberated by the Red Army is now celebrated as International Holocaust Remembrance Day, and on the site of the former camp there now stands the Auschwitz-Birkenau Museum.
So there was a sense of, I guess, the poetry of witness coming in, which is something that I would say is characteristic of my work, to look at something horrific and to try to speak of that suffering. And the impulse comes as a pure poetic instinctive impulse. I wouldn't say I've got any big political agenda. Mm.
So you do stand over your words. You're rebuffing Adorno.
I think a lot of people have taken him to task on that, and I imagine that he may have his idea around it may have softened over the years. There have been many atrocities, and are we as writers to say nothing about them? I mean, surely part of what we do is to try to raise awareness of the hideous and terrible suffering that man has inflicted on man, and so that it doesn't happen again, so that we're aware of what's really going on.
Absolutely.
And not turning away from it.
But it still strikes me that I mean, some subjects are difficult to write about, both you know, private subjects and public subjects. And I mean, you can't get much more difficult than the Holocaust and then concentration camps like Auschwitz. So is it difficult to write poems, particularly poems of that concern great public tragedies? And I mean, we don't need to look back to the Second World War to find public tragedies. Otherwise, you know, we can see there's plenty of them around today. Is it a very difficult subject to wander into?
Well, I wouldn't say I ever wander into a poem. I feel that I end up getting ambushed by a poem. So I don't have an awful lot of choice. Quite often I'm just going along in my normal little humdrum groove and I am shocked out of that balance into either outrage or curiosity or excitement. Mm. And that's how the poem begins. And so certainly it would have been extremely difficult for me to go through that experience visiting the museum that they have made of that place. And not write.
I mean, this was from your first collection. I know you're 5 collections in, your most recent one, Off Duty, just published last year. Looking back on this poem, was it in your career a departure thematically from you, or is this something that you find that recurs again and again? Themes?
Well, in different ways, yes. I mean, certainly I would feel, as I said before, whatever shakes me out of the humdrum every day tends to result in a poem. And so often physically leaving my familiar environment, mm-hmm. so visiting a new place, yes, would often be like a tripwire for a poem. But also, when I think of my latest work, Off Duty, it's about the long suffering of my husband, Stephen, who died of throat cancer after 5 years. And how we as a family, and me particularly as a carer, not always a very good carer, but I did try, got through that experience. So, you know, in some ways the personal is political. There's been a lot of discussion about the role of carers, and particularly unpaid carers, and how it is taken for granted that they will be strong with very little support themselves. So I do believe that the two can intersect.
Is it a challenge? You said to me a couple of minutes ago that you never really have, you know, large political agendas when you write the poems. You're just entering the subject, so to speak, and writing it. Is that a conscious decision? You're trying not to be political, but as you said, you know, with the subject of carers, and there's other poems in there regarding you know, the controversial topics like the death of Savita Halappanavar. Is it difficult not to become political?
No, because I think really where poetry comes from for me is a very instinctive place. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, it's like that subconscious soup diving in there and sort of coming up with something that surprises even myself. And when I wrote that poem, Labour, that's in Off Duty, it was very much about the shock of what it was like to have my own childbirth managed. But with the knowledge of so many other women and what they had been through, including Savita. And so I suppose the first impulse to write is not particularly informed by wider issues such as politics, but then that comes through with the redrafting and with the becoming more aware of what this is, because I'm not necessarily aware of where I'm going when I begin to write a poem, and that's part of the mystery of it, and I really just have to surrender to that.
You mentioned your most recent collection, Off Duty, was written during a very challenging time for you, during your husband suffering through cancer. I don't want to be too cliched about it, but I mean, how much did poetry help you cope, or was it more than just a coping mechanism? Was it something larger, something more meaningful?
I think poetry was very important to me, and I have had a lot of conversations with other widows and people who've been bereaved through situations like this, through long illness, that writing can really help you get through it, because there are many things you can't say at the time. Sort of selfish impulses and your own private suffering at being the witness of what's going on, that you somehow have no way of putting into language unless you go off and write something about it. Mm. And so it was very sustaining for me to be able to write. Again, I didn't do it consciously searching for that sustenance, but that's just the way it ended up.
And some of the poems, I mean, the really, really haunting, harrowing poems, wonderful, wonderful poems like Shirts, that great image of the shirts billowing in the wind on the washing line, And then your poor husband, obviously quite frail at that stage, and the shirts were too big for him. Yeah. Really, really wonderful poems.
Thank you.
It was you know, Rootling, your previous collection, was published in 2010, and Off Duty came 6 years later. So it was a long selection process, and it's a quite a varied, even though you're dealing with your husband's battle with cancer, it is a varied collection. There's poems of great happiness because you've also got a new family. There's, you know, a lot of joy with the young kids running around the house. I'm wondering about the selection process.
How do you put a book together?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well,
that was a long-winded phrase.
Yes. No, that's great. It's lovely to hear the way you're speaking about it. It's very flattering that you paid that attention to the book. I suppose putting together any book of poems for me is a long process. I envy poets who seem to have a book ready every couple of years. Fair play to them. I tend to write a lot, and much of what I write is never used in a book. There are poems that are just not strong enough, that somehow never really resolve themselves into fully finished poems. And I seem to have to write a lot of the dross, and every so often then there comes a poem that will last, a poem that I can really stand over. So I can have hundreds of poems and have to sift through and get that artistic distance to see them as something apart from me, something that I can judge on artistic merit. Because obviously, initially, when I first write them, I'm close to them all. They're all special. Mm. So it's a long process of disengagement and of finding that detachment, that critical awareness that I can redraft them and make them into something. And then, of course, choosing the sequence of poems, you know, how one poem will speak to another, how to space them out, and then to choose a title and somehow corral them, you know, within that title. It's a long process I find very challenging.
Returning to Off Duty, you were speaking about distancing yourself from the poems when you're in the selection process. And you're right, some of the poems are very poignant. But what I'm wondering is, you know, it's a very, very personal and very intimate glimpse into your family life, and especially your husband. Did you feel any trace of guilt at any stage sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, loaded with guilt. Still feel guilty about it.
Yeah. Is it difficult to read sometimes then for yourself?
It was a very tough decision to actually publish the book. It took me a long time after Stephen died to begin to see it as a book, although the poems had sort of really built up and I had been working on them. And I suppose I got a little bit of confidence from a few different people, like Jerry Smith in the Irish Times, for example, who's an old colleague of mine because I used to work there. Said, well, why don't you send me in a few poems, because he's the current poetry editor. So I sent in some poems and he published three very short ones. One of them was Shirts that you just mentioned. And one of them was Off Duty, which turned into the title poem of the book. And when I saw them published and I got a lot of feedback from other readers, I began to think, yes, I could make this into a book. I could do this. I don't think anyone can take it away from me that was my experience. But all writers have to tussle with this. You say your truth. You tell the truth as it is for you, and yet other people will see things quite differently, or maybe upset. And it can be very difficult to be a writer and not upset other people. That is something that sometimes makes writers be very private and not release their work into the world. But it's interesting. I was just up at the John Hewitt Summer School. And reading with Denise Riley, who's an English poet shortlisted for the T.S. Eliot Award for her powerful collection, Say Something Back, about her son's death. And we spoke afterwards about that dilemma, you know, that she has this slight sense of guilt, as I would, that in some ways we were exploiting these very personal and traumatic deaths to write. But I don't think either of us had that impulse of exploitation. It was a coping mechanism, and it was just us doing what we do as writers. We write.
Katie Donovan is a poet and a Matsu practitioner living in Dublin and has published 5 books of poetry. Her most recent offering, Off Duty, appeared in September 2016 and is published by Blood Axe Books. That's it from us for this week. A big thank you to this week's contributor, our production team and everyone at Near FM, and also to Paula Meehan for her advice and support on this series. Poem of the Week is broadcast every Monday at 12 noon and every Saturday at 10 a.m. Join us next time for Poem of the Week. Good luck and God bless.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.